My name is John Scott, and I'm an alcoholic. I shouldn't drink. And I shouldn't be here. This is an amazing deal. There's more people in this room than there are people in the whole state of Montana almost. I'd tell you that I was nervous, but if you are like my home group, everybody go, you know, so that won't do no good. Our interpreter has to interpret tonight. That's the first time I've seen her work since I've been here. And I'll try to speak slowly and precisely. That chance. I want to thank Morris and the group, the committee, for asking me and Cindy to come and share our experience, strength, and hope with you in this fantastic, I was going to say weekend, but it's not a weekend, it's a whole week. We've been here forever. And I've ate more crab in the last few days than I think I'll ever eat in my entire life. I like it. Anything, you know how we are. If we like it and we do it more than once, it just has to become a tradition. So I guess that's kind of how this thing got started some 49 years ago. What a deal, 49 years. 49 years and you're carrying the message. You're still carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, that speaks volumes. You know, we it says in the book we're people who normally would not mix. You know, there's people in AA I wouldn't even drink with, you know. Well, not if they wasn't buying, you know. If you're buying, I don't care who you are, I'll drink with you. I have. We've had some great speakers so far. I mean, Tuesday night was just fantastic. I love both the speakers we had, and Wednesday night Peggy spoke, and Peggy's just my favorite. I mean, I just love Peggy to death, and she shouldn't drink either. And last night Joe spoke and just did a great job. And I thought that Al-Anon speaker this morning just was phenomenal. I mean, yeah. She paid me to say that. And I don't know. I am just honored to be here. I really am. This is a great honor. It really is to come to you and try to share with you in a general way what it's like, what happened, and what it's like now. And my job here is to hopefully that there's somebody out there can relate to my insanity and maybe think that there's a chance for you. Because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't think there was anything in the world that was going to help my situation much. And I've been badly mistaken, thank God. I've got to experience. This is the single most important event of my life, me coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, you know, I have this secret weapon that lays between my ears, and I call it the great liar because I love liars. I always have. You know, they tell me what I want to hear, and I got this gray matter between my ears that tells me things that aren't true, and I used to, if I don't watch it, I still do believe it. And I thought that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my life was over. You know, my God, what's left? I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if you're new here and you're thinking that things are, your life has taken a turn for the worse, it probably has, but there's a lot of good living ahead of you if you can just get you out of the way. And that's what happened to me. I've been sober since December 19th, 1982, and for that I'm awful grateful and so are a heck of a lot of other people. But I always want to remember the 18th, the day before I got here. I woke up in the basement of a friend's house. I don't really remember how I ended up there, but that's kind of normal for me. And I think what had happened is, long about Thanksgiving, I went out for a loaf of bread. And that's about all I know about that. I hate that part. You know, I think Joe last night talked a little bit about that business that we have to do, you know. We got to ask them in such a way that they don't know that we don't know about what we did. And that causes torque in your life. that causes friction. You know, you don't want to ask her because she's going to lie. You know, she always exaggerates anyway, so you can't ask her. But you got to ask those other people about what you did, because you don't, you know, it wasn't good usually, you know, and you end up somewhat embarrassed. Next thing you know, you're doing it again. I quit drinking whenever I got to where I wanted to finally quit. I quit drinking almost every day. And by about noon, I was drinking it again. I don't know. It's like I felt like I was just absolutely harmless when it came to me trying to control my drinking. And I tried everything in the world. I don't know if anybody in here did this, but I would hide booze from me. It didn't work very well. Somewhere along the line, I'd tell me where it was. I didn't think that drinking was going to be much of a problem when I first started, because it made me whole, it seemed like, you know. I to this day, when I think about what booze did for me whenever I started drinking, it seemed to just take that uneasiness and that you know, I had a hard time breathing sometimes. It just take that in that not feeling like you really belong and just kind of sit you right in the middle. All the speakers so far have talked about that. You know, it's a feeling of uneasiness that we have, a dis-ease. And when I take a few drinks, almost magically I start feeling the way I think I should feel, the way I think you feel. And people from time to time would say, John, you need to quit that drinking. And I'd look at them funny because they didn't understand what I was doing. I mean, you people understood. When I got here, there was no problem with you guys telling me about what was going on. I was amazed at the way you explained to me what booze did to you, because this is the first place I'd ever heard that. But I would talk to other people, and they'd say, John, just don't drink so much. I'd try that, you know. I'd go to parties with my wife, and she had the magic number. I don't know if anybody here has been married to a wife that had the magic number. But, you know, we don't know what it is. It's not a couple. We know that. I mean, that's what we always drink, but that's not the number, you know. And so she seemed to have this ability to realize when the number was. And we'd sit there, and we'd be drinking a little bit, talking, having a good time, and all of a sudden she'd come out of nowhere and say, it's time to quit. Time to go home now. She never did it right. 13 years we was married while I was drinking, and she never did it right once. She'd always be one or two drinks too early, and the party hadn't started, or she'd be one or two drinks too late, and I was the party, you know. And we had huge fights over this booze, and she just, you know, she just didn't like drinking for some reason. She, you know, and I never understood this until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But we'd go drinking, you know, and I'd tell her, you know, you need to have a few more, because she, you know how, well, you know how they are if you've been around them, and we all knew who they are. You know, they buy these goofy drinks to begin with, that have umbrellas and stuff sticking out of them, and they got all these different colors, and they get the drink and they put them down and talk a while. You know, my deal is I order them two at a time and keep them coming. I used to drink in two different places. One was the Keg Bar, and the other was the Northern Hotel. The Northern Hotel is where I'm a rancher and a farmer, and what the Northern Hotel is where the accountants and the ranchers and farmers and bankers and lawyers and all those guys drink. The Keg Bar is kind of a different place. The Keg Bar is where the truck drivers and the motorcycle guys and the losers and users went. And I felt really at home either place, you know. And I can remember being in the bar, and I'd have my two at a time and keep them coming. Cindy had ordered one of those umbrella drinks, and she'd have, you know, hours would go by, and she'd finally finish one, and then we'd order another one, and she'd drink like two drinks, and she'd say the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. I'd say, come on, let's get another one. She'd say, oh, no, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. My God, I don't know what you're feeling, but drink past it. You know, come on, drink past it. And she just never could quite get it done. And I didn't realize until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that what happens to you and me don't happen to her. It don't happen to her. She gets this out of control, uneasy twisted feeling when she has too many drinks. Not me. I feel comfortable. I feel at home. I feel whole. I feel like I have finally able to relax and take it easy and have some intuitive thought too. I always like that part. I'd have a few drinks and all of a sudden I'd have these visions of how things should be, you know. She didn't have that. She never got that same result. And I didn't realize it until I got here that, you know, there's only about 5 or 6% of the population that get what you and I just naturally take for granted. I mean, those poor people. How would you like to drink and have 4 or 5 drinks that you really never wanted in the first place, maybe once or twice a year, and nothing happened? You know, I mean, it's like drinking a pop. You know, but that's not what happened to me. I like that feeling. It talks about in the big book. It talks about that elusive feeling. That even though I know it's killing me, even though I know that I'm going to lose my family, I'm going to lose my job, I'm going to lose my house, it's that elusive feeling, and I will follow that to the gates of insanity or death. And I don't know that because I don't realize, I don't have any idea. I have nothing to judge what's going on with me. I have no concept whatsoever that I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. The only thing that I know is when I drink, I feel better. And I know it gets me into trouble. And I know sometimes I get to drinking too much and we get into fights and I get to lose jobs and I get to get thrown in jail and all that kind of stuff. But I, you know, come on. It's the only relief that I can get. And so I drink. And I drink as much as I can every chance I get. Until one day I can't do it anymore. And I wake up in the basement of a house and I'm sitting there and I have no idea in the world what I'm going to do. I mean, I've been trying to kill myself for weeks now. I mean, stick a gun in my mouth and try to pull the trigger and I can't get the job done. I can't get the job. And I want to do it. I don't, you know. And then it kind of dawns on me because I'm a twisted type of a person. It dawns on me. I'm going to go out and kill myself and it's really not my fault. It's her fault. And I think I'll take her with me. So I get to thinking on that. And, you know, today we laugh about it. I mean, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of us have been healed from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. But I can remember not thinking about it, but I can remember dwelling upon it. And it scared me to death. And I couldn't get away from it. And that's how I came to you. I came to you with those kinds of thoughts in my head. And I was so ashamed and so embarrassed and so scared. But at the same time, I couldn't let anybody see it. Because I got this little problem. It's called image management. You know, and even though I'm on the bottom, I got to make you think that I'm doing okay. You know, and people would come to me and say, how are you doing? And I'd just tell them, I'm doing fine. Don't worry about me. I'll be okay. And they say, you don't look good. You don't look fine. I said, that's all right. I don't care what you think. I'll be all right. And that's just kind of how I lived. I had a guy at the time that I finally got to Alcoholics Anonymous, right before I got into AA, I had a guy whose name was Frank, and Frank was a feed salesman, and he came out to the feedlot. I was running a feedlot at the time, and he came out to this feedlot, and oh, I was glad to see Frank. Frank was kind of like Abby and Bill, you know. I mean, Frank liked to drink. He just liked to drink just like I did. And it was noon, and I was already drinking. Because I usually always got to drinking before noon for some reason or another. I was always nervous, you know, so if I'd have a few drinks, you know, I'd be all right. And Frank showed up, and we went up to the house, and I had a few drinks, and Frank wouldn't drink. And I'm kind of I can't figure out what's wrong with Frank. You know, because Frank always drinks. And I'm the obnoxious type of a drunk. If you don't want to drink with me and have fun, I'll drink by myself and still have fun with you. And so anyway, Frank would try to leave the house, and I'm not that big, but Frank's not that big either. My bar was in the basement, and Frank couldn't get up the steps fast enough without me grabbing hold of his hind leg and dragging him down and putting him on the stool. And I kept asking him, I says, you know, what's wrong with you, Frank? How come? He says, I'm just not drinking for today. And I said, well, that don't sound right. What's wrong with you? And finally he says, all right, John, I'll tell you what's going on. He says, I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous? My God, Frank, what's wrong with you? You drink just like I do. Frank says, yeah, I know. And I says, you know, Frank, I've been I've been kind of going crazy. I don't know. Maybe I'm drinking too much. I don't, you know. And I kind of confided in Frank a little bit and told him what was going on. And I asked him if he'd take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said no. And I mean, I didn't really know whether or not that was the right thing to do or not. I mean, that's what he said. He said no. I was in a meeting one time. Somebody came up to me and said, that's just wrong. I said, well, that may be wrong, but that's what happened. You know, you can tell the story however you want. But, So I asked Frank if I could go, and he says, no. I said, well, why not, Frank? He says, because Alcoholics Anonymous for people who want to quit drinking. And you're still drinking, obviously. He says, but when you want to quit, he says, you give me a call, and I'll be glad to take you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember waking up that next morning going, oh, my God, I can't believe what I almost did last night. I almost went to that A&A. Oh, you know, I said, this drinking's getting out of hand. I'm going to have to start watching it. And I didn't realize that for the next 6 months, I was just going to deteriorate. There was nothing flashy about it. It was just day after day a grind. You know, every day was just a little bit worse than the day before. Nothing fancy. I mean, I ain't thrown in jail. Nothing happened. I just got worse. Every day just got worse. Until this morning, December 18th, and I woke up. And the only guy I knew in AA that I could, the only guy I knew in AA was Frank. And me and this guy that I've been running with for 4 or 5 weeks, I guess, I said, let's go see Frank. So we drove down to Frank's feed store. We was nervous, so we had to stop at the bar first and get ourselves we got a case of beer. And we were drinking on this beer a little bit, and we drove up to Frank's feed store, and I walked in, and Frank, I said, a guy named Johnny and me are outside, and I says, I'd like for you to come talk to us a little bit about this AA stuff. And, oh, he was glad to see us. He come out there, he had the 20 questions. You guys have seen the AA 20 questions. You know the 20 questions that nobody can pass? You know? You know? I mean, you can't do it. Can't be done. I sat there and I cheated as much as I could. And I think I got 15 out of them wrong. You know, you sit there and it says if you do one wrong, you might be, but if you do two wrong, you probably are, and three, you're just screwed. You know, and you know, I have this secret weapon, and I knew what was. I just know things that aren't true. I just know them, and I knew the deal. Alcoholics Anonymous, the name is hurting you guys. You know, nobody's going to come in here. And so what you've done is you've devised a test that nobody could pass. You know, so some guy down in his luck like me would have to go to AA, and you would trap him. And you'd have, you know, after you've been there for a few weeks, they'd want you to sign up, and you'd have to pay $50 to $100 a month for the rest of your life. I mean, and I just knew, and I didn't talk to nobody about this. I just know, you know. And anyway, he comes out there, and we looked at this test, and Johnny couldn't pass it either. Both of us, we flunked. And I asked Frank. I said, Frank, this ain't going good. I mean, I can't hardly stand it. Something's got to change. Would you think you could take me and Johnny to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And Frank said, no. I says, well, why not, Frank? He says, because Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to quit drinking, and you and Johnny are still drinking, obviously. Look, you got a case of beer here. You're halfway through it already, and it's only 8:30. You know? He says, I'll tell you what. Drink as much as you want the rest of the day. But tomorrow, when you get up, don't you drink no more. And that kind of sounded good to me because, how you want to quit, but you don't want to quit. And so I'm ready to quit, but not quite just now. And tomorrow always sounded better for me. You know, don't ever do anything today that you can do tomorrow, you know. So I was all, you know, so we went to my favorite place, the cake bar, and we're sitting in the cake bar at you know, 9 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning. And there's five of us in there, the bartender, two other guys, and me and this Johnny, and we passed this 20 questions around, and you know that there wasn't a single person in that entire bar that morning could pass that test? Nobody. So obviously my thought was right. It was a trap. Today what I like is every once in a while when Cindy has her Alley 99s over, and we have them, I don't know how they do it. They can't drink right and they can't do the test right because they don't pass it. You know, it's amazing. It's an amazing test. So anyway, we're sitting there, and I always want to remember how good it was, me drinking, you know. And I can remember me sitting in the keg bar that day, and I was over in the corner crying because I was alone and lonely and nobody would drink with me. And then somebody would come by and they'd want to sit down and talk to me and maybe see how I was doing, and I'd want to fight them. And then they'd leave and I'd cry because I was alone and lonely and nobody wanted to be with me. And that's pretty much how my last day of wonderful drinking went. And I woke up the next morning, and Cindy told a little bit of her story this morning. She did not like my friends at all. And Johnny, or this Frank had called Cindy up and says, "Don't let them drink." And she had a hard time even talking to these guys. And she told him something, and that she had no intentions whatsoever to make me do nothing. We had gotten to a place where we just basically hated each other. I mean, it was kind of a contest of wills. You know, whoever turned loose first lost. And we really didn't like each other much, and we liked to live like that for a long time, it seemed like. And she threw the phone at me. I talked to Frank, and Frank says, "I want you to come in tonight." He says, "I got a guy I want you to meet. His name is Frank, or his name is Richard, and he's my sponsor." And I figured, well, there's where Frank's money's going. And I went and I got in there a little early. They had a restaurant across the street from where the meeting was. And Richard was this guy who was a car salesman, used car salesman, three-piece suit, stood really tall, smoked cigarettes just like this, just constantly, you know. He was nervous. He had been sober for 5 years and gone out and got drunk and almost died within a period of about 30 days and got back into AA now, and he was sober now for another 5 or 6 years. And we sat down at this restaurant, and these guys ordered a steak and wanted to know if I would want one, and I was not hungry, and they ordered one for me anyway and ate it and laughed and joked and played and all that kind of stuff, and I was just going nuts. Because I've been on this runner for several weeks now, since Thanksgiving almost, and Richard asked me a question. He says, "John," he says, "do you believe that you're responsible for your own actions?" Now, I've been trying to get into this group for over 6 months now, you know, and I'm finally got to where I'm at the place where I can almost get in, and I know the answer has to be right. And I know that Frank has been talking to Cindy, and Frank's been talking to Richard and letting him know what's going on. And the answer that I knew was probably right was yes. And I said, "Yes." And he says, "Good, now you'll start acting. Maybe now you'll start acting like it." And I thought, he has been talking to Cindy. And he started to tell me things about him and his life and about what alcohol had done to him and his family. And I began to realize that he had not been talking to Cindy. I began to realize that he knew what I was up against. Took him about probably 15, maybe 10, 15 minutes. And I began to realize that he knew something that most people didn't know. And he had me. We went to the meeting that night, and there was a gal that raised her hand, and I raised my hand as newcomers, and I've never seen her since. Now, why am I here and she's not? I have no idea in the world. None. But I know one thing. That first night that I was here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I experienced something that I had not experienced in some time. And it wasn't that I came in and felt like I was home or nothing like that. But I came in here and I felt a twinge of hope. I began to hear you guys talk in such a way that I knew that you knew. I knew that you knew. And I understood that you had a solution, at least for yourselves, that had pulled you out of the pit. And that to me was I was locked in for a while. And I got to the point where I really wanted to come back tomorrow night. There's a guy named Johnny. He says, "I'm going to be your sponsor." And he says, "I'll tell you what you're going to do. When this meeting's over, you're going to come to my house, and we're going to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to introduce you to my family, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit. And so I went to Johnny's house, and Johnny had been sober for about 7 years, a little over 7 years. And we went to his house, and Johnny talked to me until 2 o'clock. And in Billings, Montana, at 2 o'clock, the bars close. He says, "It's time for you to go home now." So I go home, and in the morning, I'm supposed to report back into Johnny, who happened to have this auctioneer place. And I go in there, and I meet with him, and we're talking, and pretty quick, two members from Alcoholics Anonymous show up, and they take me someplace. And then about noon, we meet up with two more members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they take me someplace else. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, two more members of Alcoholics Anonymous show up, and they take me someplace else, and then they take me to the meeting. And after the meeting, Johnny, he takes me home. At 2 o'clock, he says, "It's time for you to go home now." And the next morning, I'm supposed to report to Johnny in there at the place. And the next thing you know, there's two guys from AA show up, and they take me someplace. And I was nervous, and they fix this concoction of K-Roll syrup, orange juice, and honey with a whole bunch of vitamins, but I don't know what they were anymore. And they stuck it in a blender. "Here, drink this. It'll make you feel better." It didn't make me feel better, but I got to telling them I was feeling better. I acted as if before I knew what I was doing, you know. And they relayed me for, I don't know, quite a while, a couple of weeks, I suppose. And a funny thing happens to us alcoholics, or at least to me, is I could see things almost immediately. And I was excited about this idea of maybe being able to stay sober. And if you're new here, it takes a while to understand what the language is. I mean, what do we mean by these things? You know, like sobriety. Sobriety to me, when I was new, sounded like it meant that for the rest of my life, I'm not going to drink, but I'm going to really, really want to. Now, if you're new, that's not what we're talking about when we talk about sobriety. If you're new, sobriety means not drinking the rest of my life and not caring. It's no big deal. There is no thing that drinking can add to my life. It can only take away. And I'm not interested. I'm not interested in living the old life that I used to live. I'm interested in living the life of sobriety. But it took some time to get past those first few years of insanity. You know, what happens to alcoholics like me, if you don't watch it within a few days, you know, that old ego problem, that image management problem that I was talking about, comes back. And all of a sudden, I begin to see the flaws in the group. I know that's never happened to anybody out here. But I did. You know, the more I think about it, it was a really fantastic group of people. But, and don't hear me wrong, I talk about these guys in a kind of a funny way, but they literally saved my life, and I love them dearly. There's this guy named Tom, and they'd call him Tom, and he said, "Hi, my name is Tom, and I'm a grateful alcoholic." Well, there's a liar, you know. You know, there's a gal named Millie, and Millie would always sit in her same little place, you know, and she'd say, "John..." She's just such a grandmotherly type. She said, "John, just look at all the miracles." You know, I'm looking around. I don't see nothing like a miracle, you know. Guy named Gerald. Gerald thought I had an attitude problem. I don't know where he ever got that idea. Gerald would come up to me and shake my hand and say, "John, how you doing?" You know, pretty much hate God, hate you, hate AA. And he said, after 2 or 3 weeks of that, he said, "That's enough. That's enough. We're not going to do that no more." He says, "From now on, John, when I come up to you and I shake your hand, you will look me in the eye and you'll say, 'Why, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much.'" Now, AA is a rigorously honesty program, and they're making me lie almost immediately. There's this guy in the group. His name was Nick, and Nick was a little short guy who seemed to kind of be the ringleader, you know. I don't know if you guys have a ringleader in your group, but we got one in mine. And he'd have the ability to hit people if they were new, or hit them if they were 20 years. It didn't make any difference. He had an ability to connect with people, so I was told. And he would walk behind. Frank and I had this problem. We both hated our wives and was getting a divorce. And we'd be sitting on the couch, and Nick would walk back behind us and say, well, and we'd be whining a little bit, you know, because we're newcomers, we're just whining all the time. And Nick would walk behind us and say, well, pour me another drink, you know. And Nick's deal was he said, there's no reason for me to remember your name if you've been here for less than 6 months because you're just a visitor. Yeah, that's no way to treat new people, I agree. And I got to seeing all these flaws, you know. There's another gal, her name was Margaret, and Margaret was so... I mean, sometimes when people talk, it's like you kind of hang on every word they say. Well, Margaret, they'd call on her, and she'd say, hi, my name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic. And them that go to meet and stay sober, and them that don't. Thank you. Now, that's a pretty lame message, I thought. We call her 6 months from now, and you ask, you know, my name is Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic, and them that go to meet and stay sober, and them that don't. God, don't call them Margaret no more, you know. It's like, so one day I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, you know before I go any further, my sponsor, Johnny, he got to talking about these guys the same way, you know, that they was goofy and doing things wrong and stuff. And he'd gotten mad at the group. And within a few days, I was sober for about 45 days, and Johnny went out and got drunk. And I thought, you know, this is... I don't know what to do with this. I mean, I thought you came to AA and everybody stayed sober forever, you know. And here my sponsor just went out and got drunk. And that night I remember going to the meeting, and I'd been thinking about this. I had a little resentment in the first place because he just appointed himself my sponsor. And I was going to get a new sponsor. And it was this little blonde I'd been watching, and she was, you know, well, she had what I wanted. And I was probably willing to go to any lengths to get it, too. But I can remember walking across the room, and I had my eye on her, and out of no place comes this Richard. And he says, I understand your sponsor's gone. And I says, yeah, that's what I hear. He says, well, I'm going to be your sponsor now. And I said, well, Richard, I don't think I want you to be my... He says, I didn't ask you. I didn't ask you whether or not you wanted me to be your sponsor. I'm going to be your sponsor. He had this ability to know what I wanted. Just uncanny ability. Within a few weeks, he'd sold me a diesel car, you know. So here I got this used car salesman for a sponsor selling me a car. And Cindy and I, at that time, we were not talking. And I can remember to this day how elated she was when I brought that diesel car home. It was like, it just made things worse, you know. It's just, I can remember. I thought, you know, this Nick, he's talking like he don't ever want to remember anybody's name unless they've been here for 6 months. And I'm gonna get. I don't know if anybody in this room has done this, but I'm gonna get this old guy. I'm gonna get him. So I go up to Nick, and in my best newcomer whiny voice, I start to tell Nick about how my wife has been screwing me over and how bad my life is. And he yells at me and tells me to shut up. And he jumps up, and I jump up. And this is after the meeting. There's only about 8 or 9 people around. And I jump up, and I'm leaving. I'm quitting AA forever. This is enough. I mean, I got a belly full of this crap, and I don't need it anymore. There's an old boy in our group. His name was Rotten Ralph. And his favorite deal was... Rotten Ralph was a lawyer, and he still goes to meetings in Billings, by the way. And his favorite deal was he would sit there and hammer on some new guy who was maybe whining about his wife. And after he'd get through, he'd say, now, if I had really ticked you off bad enough that you feel like you need a drink, he'd pull out a dollar and say, let me buy that first drink. You know, I mean, that's no way to treat a newcomer either, is it? And so anyway, Ralph was in that room when Nick was yelling at me about, you know, Nick yells at me and says, you're just wasting your time. Quit screwing around here. You're just wasting your time, you're wasting my time, and you're wasting their time. And out of nowhere comes this Ralph with his dollar bill over Nick's shoulder and says, yeah, let me buy you your first drink. Let me buy you your first drink. Let me buy you. You know, and I can remember jumping up and running outside, and I jumped in that diesel car that my sponsor had just sold me. And I start driving home, and I'm going to spin gravel. And, you know, and this is not like the diesels we have now. This is the old kind that just, And I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. I'm beating on the dash. I'm honking the horn. And she's like, I can't. I mean, just completely insane. I hadn't had a drink in probably 3 or 4 months. You know, I'm just absolutely nuts. And somewhere along the line, I begin to realize that I was an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, the same kind that Nick and Richard and these guys had all been talking about. And somewhere along the line, it dawned on me that probably my only hope was to get over myself and start doing what these guys were asking me to do, as stupid as it seemed. And I can remember that next day I got back in my diesel car, and I started to drive those miles back to town. And I thought, God, I just hate this. This is so embarrassing. I got to go in that room. The first person I'm going to see is that Gerald. And how you doing, John? Well, Gerald, I'm getting better in every way, every day. Thank you very much. And I'm going to have to apologize for cussing at Nick. I'm going to have to give Ralph back his damn dollar. No. And but something happened during that period of time. I began to realize that I didn't realize. I began to know that I didn't know. I begin to understand that I did not understand. I was in the grips of something that was way bigger than I was. And I knew these people had some kind of an answer for my problem. And somehow deep down inside, I was willing to do whatever it took for those, you know, to accomplish the task at hand. It says in the 12th step that having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So we started that process. That in the back of the book, when it talks about spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, it talks about a change of attitude. And Lord knows I needed a change of attitude, you know. And little by little, those people gave me that change of attitude. They began to turn that thing around. Richard asked me, how are you doing at home? Well, not good, Richard. I'm getting a divorce. He says, hold on a minute. He says, now let me get this straight. Is she getting a divorce or are you getting a divorce? I said, I'm getting a divorce. You'll quit that right now. He didn't realize how crazy she was. I mean, she told you a little bit about the story tonight, you know, earlier today about the gun event, but there was another deal. I came home one night. I know this is going to be hard for you guys to believe, but I came home one night. And I was just, you know, I was slightly intoxicated. I'd had a few drinks. And I went to hang up my coat. And out of the closet comes this weirdo with a broom and hits me in the belly and bends me over and then knocks me back and gets me down on the ground. And for some reason, I thought it was funny, which was a bad deal. I started laughing at her, which you don't want to do. If you got any pre-Al-Anons in your house or even Al-Anons, don't do it. Don't do it. And I started laughing, and she danced on me for a long time. You know? And, you know, just things like that. She would, you know, she would leave me in the... She was a designated driver long before we knew that we even needed designated drivers. And we would get home, and it would be like 20 or 30 below, and she would leave me outside in the car asleep. And she'd go inside and hope that I would freeze to death during the night, you know. And I told my sponsor, I told Richard, hell, she's crazy as a loon. He says, damn right she's crazy. Anybody live with you for 13 years got to be plumb out of her mind. Got to be plumb out of her stinking mind. He says, but right now, at this time, we have you two contained. He says, you're going to go home and you're going to tell her you love her. And then it goes again, you know, honesty program, they're making me lie again. He says, you're going to go home and you're going to tell her that you love her. And he says, but for you, you're a liar. And she knows it and I know it and you're beginning to learn it, that you are a liar. So for you, you're going to have to show her that you love her. And I mean, I hadn't been in the big bed for so long. My ears went up. She said, "No, no, no." He says, "That's not what we're talking about." He says, "You can forget about that right now." He says, "What you're going to do?" He says, "You're going to go home and you're going to show her that you love her, and that means that you're going to carry out the garbage, and you're going to clean up after yourself, and you're going to fix her a meal every once in a while, and you're going to take care of your side of the house. And I ain't going to do it. Thank you very much, but I'm not going to do it." He says, "Now, listen. If you do it," he says, "I'm going to give you a carrot now." He says, "If you do it and you do it well, it will drive her crazy." All right, I'll do it. So I went home, and it just happened about that time I was working on my inventory, and I went home, and she was just crazy, and she had to be crazy. He was right. She had to be crazy to live with me. And she comes at me, and she starts telling me, "You're a dirty rat and SOB, and here's some of the things." And she had been taking my inventory, unbeknownst to me. And what got her was, when she played out, I just pulled out this list that I'd been working for my sponsor. And I said, "Well, you left out this and this and this." And you could just see her. You could just see that look of, she didn't know what to do with it. And she just turns around and walks away. And I go, "Yes." it's just amazing what AA was doing for me already. But on the other hand, my sponsor says, "Invite her to come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." And that was like pulling teeth, too. It's like, "Oh, dang, I don't want to do that." He says, "No, just do it." So I started to invite her to come to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And she would sit there and she'd listen to these people describe the illness of alcoholism. And little by little, she began to understand that we did have a problem here. And, it hasn't been wonderful by any means. We are not kind and loving people who never fight or argue, because that happens all the time, even here lately. Look what Peggy say, there's those moments of blessed silence, But, it has been so good. And if you're new here tonight and you're thinking that your life is over, I got to tell you, it has just been so good. Life beyond my wildest dreams have happened here in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the single most important event of my life by far. Little by little, we started to go through the steps. And the doctor's opinion talks about how we get irritable and we get restless and we get discontent. And that means that's when we're sober. That's when we're doing about as good as we can. There's a little part in the big book that says that our problem is centered in our minds. I thought I fought drinking. I don't fight drinking. I fight sobriety. I can't stand me sober. I can't stand you sober either, And it's like something along the line had to change. I have to get to a place where I can live comfortably within my own skin. And that's what the steps are designed for. They allow me to begin to realize that there's a need for a power greater than myself that can show me a way that I can live normally. Or maybe not normally, but I can live a heck of a lot better. I don't know if we'll ever get normal. I don't think most of us wouldn't want to be normal, But the thing is I want to be better. I want to get to the place where I can live life comfortably. I always wanted to be a good man. I always wanted to be somebody that I could be of help to other people. And the book shows us how to do exactly what I'd always wanted to do, but I had no means to do it. Little by little, you work your way through those steps and you begin to realize that you're powerless over alcohol and that your life is unmanageable. That means that I can't live life successfully sober and I can't live life successfully drunk. I get drunk and the next thing I finally, my body plays out or my money plays out or something happens and I sober up. And then I'm sober and I try to stay sober and I try to do good, and little by little, things just drive you crazy. And finally, you got to drink again. And I begin to realize that I need some help at staying sober. It's sobriety that I'm fighting. And so it talks about in the second step that we need a power greater than ourselves that restores to sanity. Need something. Whatever it is that I've been trying to, however it is that I've been trying to live my entire life isn't working. It doesn't mean that it's good or bad or indifferent. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So little by little, I was so fortunate. My sponsor, Richard, took me through the steps in such a way that you didn't even feel like he was going through the steps, but he was making me accountable. He was making me responsible. He was showing me how to live a life that I didn't even know what was, it's like I didn't even know what was going on. You know, he'd been having a lot of troubles with his wife. That's why he was living in Montana. She lived in California. And after about 2 years of him sponsoring me, and Cindy and I kind of got to where we could talk and laugh with each other a little bit, I think he decided to go home and try it on his own. You know, some of the stuff that he'd been telling me. You know, and it worked. Next thing you know, he comes back to Montana with her, and he ends up having lung cancer. And I was with him. I was holding his hand the night he died. And I made a hideous mistake. I asked another guy to be my sponsor. His name was Jim Shaw. I don't know if anybody in this room knows him. But he was a radical Alcoholics Anonymous guy. He believed that his word was final. And I believed him too. and we went through the steps again. And it was a fantastic process that we got to do. And in the meantime, somewhere along the line, I got to sponsoring a lot of guys. And little by little, we decided we'd start us a group. And we started this group, and it's turned out to be just a super blessing. And Cindy was talking about our daughter, you know. I mean, we're going to AA, Cindy's going to Al-Anon, and, you know, and daughter's going to Alateen. And everything's wonderful until we find out that she's drinking all the time. And amazing process at Alateen. You got to watch them. You know, it's kind of a place where alkies pop up all over the place. Next thing you know, I got a daughter who's been in AA for, 16 years now. And you sit down and you think about it. Sometimes they'll say, you need to write down what you'd like to see in your life. I'd have never put Marilyn in that list. And I'd have never put my daughter in that list. I would have cheated myself. I don't know what I need. And that's one of the great gifts that I've received in Alcoholics Anonymous, is this expectation that I have, this constant expectation that seems to always put me in the turmoil. It's like it little by little slips away if I allow it. See, if God's in charge of my life, if I've made the third step decision to turn my one life over to the care of God as I understand Him, then some things have to happen. I have to start acting like it. It's an amazing deal once I start acting like there's a God, suddenly He shows up, you know. Now, don't get me wrong. There's days that you could come over to my house and you'd swear that Cindy and I, either one, had ever been in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or anything else. You know, we're pretty basic human beings. There's no doubt about that. We're not going to get fancy here. But the truth of the matter is we're living a life beyond our wildest dreams. I cannot live like this by myself, okay? I cannot live like this by myself. I have to have you people. You know, there's times in my life that I thought AA was getting pretty boring. You know, you go along, you plug along, you go to meetings night after night after night with monotonous regularity, and you sit there and see the same damn people you saw last night, and you try to simulate some kind of interest, but really you couldn't care less. You know, and AA gets to be gray. And the best remedy for that I know of is find a new person or a bleeding old person. Find somebody. And go see if you can be of service to them, whether they want it or not. Well, it's not about them anyway, is it? It's about me. You know? And little by little, like I think it was the speaker this morning might have said, you know, little by little I begin to be, no, you said it last night. Little by little I begin to be more interested in your well-being than I am my well-being. And what a gift. All of a sudden I have everything I ever needed, everything I ever wanted. But it's not exactly what I wanted or needed. It's better. It's better. So if you're new here tonight and you're thinking, my God, I'm just going to survive. You're not going to survive. You're going to live, and you're going to live really, really well. Provided that you get yourself a sponsor and you work these steps to the best of your ability and you grab a hold of him and you grab a hold of somebody behind you and you drag them along. You drag them along whether they want to come along or not. And if they don't want to do it, get some, as the book says, don't waste too much time. Grab another one. You know, and the next thing you know, I've got 20 of these yahoos running around loose behind me. It's like, God, I've overcorrected again. You know, and you just kind of, one day you just kind of wake up and there's a fellowship that has grown up among you, amongst you. It's like, where did this come from? I got people who walk in. I've been asleep at my house in the middle of the night and have new guys walk in and say, John, what are you doing, John? Now, I got a problem. I did too. I was sleeping, and now I got an idiot downstairs, you know. We put on a deal like this. I hope it hasn't burnt down. It was right in the middle of that fire that was going on in Montana here a couple of days, well, yesterday. Still going on now, I guess. And one of my new guys came up to me one day. I mean, I don't know. When I was new, if something like this was going on, I'm just absolutely crazy because I'm in charge. You know, I know that doesn't happen anywhere else, but I get just absolutely crazy. And one of my new guys comes up to me and says, I got a problem and I need to talk to you right away. I haven't got time for you right now. But I want you to go talk to somebody you do not know and talk to them and see if you can help them. And he was upset with me because I told him that. And so anyway, he tells a story that he didn't talk to somebody that he didn't know. He talked to somebody he did know, and I had enough time to walk across the room and tell him that I told him to talk to somebody he didn't know. And so anyway, several hours later, I walked up to Bob and I says, Bob, what's your problem? And he couldn't remember. Now, that's how great some of our problems are. You know, and being a good alcoholic, we love that. Part of my old thinking was that if I can get my life screwed up enough, crazy enough, insane enough, I'll just have to drink. And I think it's that old thought process that we have. And somehow, as we work the steps, we get to where we don't get immune from that, but we begin to pick up on it a little faster, and we cannot live like that. And with God's help and with working the steps and with taking the inventories and finding out what it is that is driving us to this goofiness that we seem to have, we can get to where we are kind of fortified against it, you know. It says in the book, it says there will come a day that if my spiritual house is not in order, I'll drink again. And I have no illusions whatsoever. I will drink again. I have proof by hundreds of people that I have watched in Alcoholics Anonymous who go out and drink on a regular basis. I will drink again. All I got to do is just quit doing this. That's all. It's like Gerald said. Gerald had a lot of good things to say after I got over myself. Gerald used to say things like, you see those lights up there? He says, someplace there's a big dam. It took a lot of energy, a lot of money, a lot of people, a lot of time to build that dam. He says, they have laid cables, they have laid transformers. There is all kinds of wiring inside this building. It took a lot of energy, effort, and money to make those lights come on. He says, but when you go over there and you flip that switch, that darkness comes automatic. And that's kind of the way it is in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. All I've got to do to have that darkness come automatic is to flip the switch. I don't need this anymore. And the proof of that is you just watch the people who do the deal. I don't want to do that. I am interested in long-term sobriety. I want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous till the day I die. I really believe I owe it to you, and I owe it to my family, and I owe it to my God. I really believe that I owe. And this is no chore coming here and sharing with you my experience, strength, and hope. I hope there's some good here that came out of the deal. And if you're new, I know this probably won't make any sense to you, but when I stand up here tonight and I look around, I got to tell you, I'm like Millie. I see a lot of miracles. There's all kinds of miracles in this room. There's miracles that are happening right as we speak. And if you're new and you're here and you don't, you know, you're trying to grab hold of some little pearl, I'm going to give you a pearl, a great pearl that I found along the way. And that is, them that go to meetings stay sober, and them that don't, don't. Thank you.